Wide Open Space by Revere, read by Fairy D 123. Cold. The concrete floor is cold under his shins. He must have fallen in water at some point, he can't remember. His trousers are soaked through, and the cold seeps up through the floor and into the ruined suit, his bones up and up into every part of him. Something tugging at his hand. Ianto looks down. It's Jack kneeling in front of him, pulling the gun out of his fingers. He'd forgotten. He really isn't trying to hang on. It's just that his fingers have curled tight around the metal, frozen there. He watches Jack easing each finger loose, the way the skin sticks a little, because there's blood, her blood, on his hands, on the floor around him. Jack's speaking to him. Ianto stares at his moving lips, hypnotized, but he can't work out what Jack's saying. The sound is all muffled, the way it was on the day HQ was attacked, when all the explosions left his ears ringing with the same huge, dull static. Like that now. When did the bomb go off here? He can't think of anything to say, can't move, can't even shrug. Jack puts a hand on his shoulder and nods. It's okay. And Ianto watches as the room washes red and black around him, everything sliding away like a telescope in reverse. He's sitting in the bath, the steam drifting up past the taps, so the water must be hot, but Ianto still can't feel anything but the cold, familiar and numbing. He looks down at his legs, pale as pink quartz, watches the faint rust-like tinge swirling in the water, more red rust floating slowly away from his hands. He doesn't want to move them. The grout in the tiles behind the bath is stained a vicious green. He never did get to see what it was that had sprayed the same green all around the bathroom. Some visitor Jack had decided to dispose of personally, though he'd left the aftermath for Ianto to clean up. Nothing he'd tried had been able to get the green out of the grout, though. He'd been thinking about regrouting it, but there just hadn't been time. "Well, don't just sit there." Owen is slouched on the floor, propped in the bathroom doorway. He looks pinched and pissed off, reassuringly normal for him. He points at the shelf next to the bath. "Soap and shampoo up there. You need to... Look, I helped you get your kit off. That's as far as I go. Sort the rest out for yourself." Ianto doesn't say anything, but the question must have been there in his face. Owen sighs, shrugging. "Captain's orders. Not to be left on your own. Trust me, soon as he gets back, I'm out of here." It's weird. Ianto recognizes the words, but he just doesn't understand them, any of them. The bathroom's too quiet and far too bright, gleaming white tiles everywhere. He takes a breath, lets himself slide slowly back, back and down, closes his eyes and feels the water rise over his face in a gentle caress. That's better. Dark and the distant clanking and rumbling of the torchwood pipes. Still cold from head to toe. He could stay like this until a tight grip on his arm pulls him roughly upright. Owen's leaning over the bath, looking even more annoyed. "Oi, oi, none of that!" Ianto stares at him, confused. Owen lets go of his arm, sighing, and reaches over for the shampoo. "God, all right, come on then." Ianto bows his head, watching soap suds splatter onto the rusted water as Owen's fingers dig into his scalp. He's in the car, wrapped in a blanket and covered in someone's coat. Jack's? Owen is driving, Jack next to him. Tosh and Gwen are in the back, boxing him in. Gwen is hunched into herself, though from time to time he feels the slight heat of her breath on his cheek, knows she's staring at him. Tosh is pressed against his side, or maybe he's leaning against her. She's holding his hand tightly, fingers laced together. Each time they stop at traffic lights or junctions, she gives them an even tighter squeeze. It's still dark. He has no idea what time it is, but there's hardly any other traffic. As they pass the street lamps, the light throws a reflection of Owen's face onto the windscreen, Jack's a second later, then gone, then back again. The orange light flattens them into twin masks, distant and inhuman. No one says anything, but the dull thrum of the engine is soothing. It reminds him of the long drive from London to Cardiff months ago, a convoy of overnight lorries transporting equipment salvaged from the Canary Wharf HQ. Riding in the cab of Transport 4, the one with the secure container he'd packed himself, stamped classified, like the other bits and pieces of alien tech that had survived the attack. There hadn't been much, but with so few survivors to work on the ruined site, no one had ever been down with him into what was left of the conversion plant. He'd worn her heart monitor on his wrist, watching the tiny pulse of blue light all the way down the M4 and across the 7, heading towards a full moon hanging brightly over Newport. When he wakes up again, he's in bed. It takes him the longest time to recognize the room. It's the flat he rented when he came back here, to this other Torchwood. Next door, the living room will be full of boxes, all their things from the flat in Camden Town waiting to be unpacked, waiting for Lisa to come back and make it all matter again. There's a rustle to his left. Ianto jerks upright, startled. Jack is sitting next to the bed, a book in his hand. He doesn't say anything, just studies Ianto for a while, before reaching over for a thermos on the bedside table. "Tea," he says, filling the cup. "Courtesy of Gwen, who had to drive to the Tesco Metro to get it. And the milk and the sugar, not to mention the hobnobs. And the kettle. You do know you have absolutely nothing in your kitchen, right?" He reaches into a pocket, pulling out a small hip flask and pouring a generous slug into the cup. "And this is brandy, my contribution. Here, drink." Questions are hard, but orders he can cope with. Ianto takes the cup. It's only half filled, which is a good thing from the way the tea shakes and sloshes as he takes a sip. Hot, sweet, and a bit too milky, though maybe that's the brandy changing the taste. He drains the cup obediently, but when Jack says, "More?" he shakes his head. "Okay, go back to sleep." He lies down again and Jack picks the book up. Ianto watches him in profile, reading quickly and intently. He's sitting in the office chair from the spare room, his feet on the corner of the bed. It doesn't look comfortable. Ianto braces himself and says, "I'm not going to do anything. I mean, it's up to you now what happens. You don't need to stand guard." "That's not why I'm here. Go to sleep." He wants to, because the alternative is giving in to that feeling that something else is about to explode, but he needs to get one last confession out first. "Down in the basement, did you? There's another, a man, a body, he..." "Yeah, I know." Jack looks at him then. "Dr. Tanizaki, the cybernetics guru. I recognized him. Well, you know, from his wallet, not so much from his..." "Whoa!" Ianto's out of the bed, across the hall, into the bathroom. "And okay, so he only makes it as far as the sink, and not the toilet bowl. But it's only tea coming up anyway. Even so, it takes a while for the retching to subside." Jack has followed him in, watching silently as Ianto sluices out the sink, scoops water into his mouth, then picks up the toothbrush and scrubs away, concentrating on each tooth one at a time. "So not even a teaspoon in the kitchen, but you managed to sort out the bathroom," Jack says at last. He sounds amused. Ianto drops the toothbrush back into its glass, reaching for the towel. The cold is ebbing back again, each inching up from the bathroom lino through the soles of his feet. He shivers, hands shaking as he tries to hang the towel back straight on the rail. It's a nice bathroom. He'd been lucky, really. Took the first place the estate agent had suggested. It's small, but new and very clean. Too quiet now, though. All he can hear is his own breathing, in and out in a shaky whistle. "You should do it here," he says to Jack, and he's surprised to hear his own voice sounding so calm, almost normal. "Do what?" Ianto keeps his eyes on the tower rail. "It'd be easier in here. The rest of the flat's carpet and laminate. That stuff's a bugger to get clean." "Look, I honestly don't know what you're talking about." He turns then. Jack is sitting on the side of the bath, hands clasped loosely. "You said if I didn't kill her, then you'd execute me." Jack stares, then gives a snort, rubbing one hand over his face. "Oh, come on, Ianto. One thing I have figured out, you're way smarter than I'd given you credit for, and I knew you weren't exactly an idiot before." If I was going to kill you, I'd have done it back at Torchwood. Why would I bring you back here?
So they don't know, Ianto says flatly. Gwen, Toshiko, maybe. You fake a suicide. You've got Sally's body, the pizza girl. Do something to her head to disguise the... where the sore... you know, and bring her here. Then it'd have to be pills, or cut my wrists in the bath, something like that. Murder-suicide. Nice and easy for the police.
Well, that's, melodramatic. Have you been lying in there working this all out?
Ianto shrugs. I'm just thinking out loud what the options are. It's what you've had me doing for months now. Sticking bodies on the railway line or in the bay, that man with the car exhaust, it's... I'm just being practical.
No, you're being stupid or morbid, and I can't don't know which annoys me more.
You really think I'm working through some big plan here?
That's kind of flattering, but I promise you, I have no idea what I'm doing.
He stands up so quickly that Ianto flinches back instinctively.
Come on, you need to get back into bed.
He steers Ianto back into the bedroom. Ianto sits on the bed, and that seems to rob him of the last of his shallow momentum. He wraps his arms around his knees and rocks, and Jack stands there looking down at him, frowning.
Jesus, Ianto, look at you. You're skin and bone. I found a sleeping bag in the basement when I was cleaning up. You haven't even slept in this place before, have you? How long were you living down there?
He's been back to the flat once a week, every Saturday afternoon, to wash his clothes and pick up the mail. He shrugs helplessly.
From when they sent the HQ stuff up here. When I came here, with her. I needed to be with her.
Some mornings you look like death, you know, Jack says quietly, flitting around Torchwood like the world's most immaculate vampire.
I used to tell myself that you were just young, too busy going out and getting shit-faced every night, screwing your way around Cardiff.
Of course, I knew I was kidding myself. Mostly, I just thought,
oh great, Ianto's in early again, thank God. I can get some decent coffee.
He wants to get back under the duvet again, but he doesn't have the energy even to lie down.
I'm sorry, he whispers, head in his hands,
and Jack gives a strange, strained laugh. I guess you didn't notice that was me there, trying to work my way up to an apology.
Look, if you and I start saying sorry now, neither of us is going to be done by the next millennium.
Come on, have some more tea. It'll help.
No brandy this time.
Ianto holds the thermos cup in both hands, sipping slowly, and the sick feeling fades after a while. Eventually, he curls up on his side and lets Jack tug the duvet up and drape it over him. Still too cold, but he closes his eyes anyway, listening to the faint rasp of Jack turning page after page.
It's too silent. Plans. There were always plans before. Things to do, fears to conquer. He's fallen asleep for months now to the hum of alien technology, the steady hush of Lisa's ventilator. Trying to improve the medication, trying to get the new components she needed, trying to find someone who could help. Trying to keep the secret. Telling her over and over that it would all be okay. That he'd look after her and protect her and keep her safe. Make her well. Nothing now. He broke his promise. He can feel the cold trickling into the empty space, flooding him. He always wondered what it would feel like to drown.
When it's dark, he told her, you can see the words written in light reflecting out onto the bay. He's at the Millennium Center, standing between the dragon and the quay, watching the lunchtime visitors coming and going around him. Nice, normal lives. It's a good place to gather up little scraps and anecdotes to share with Lisa on the nights when she wakes up. Everyday conversations about jobs and families and what was on the telly last night. Better that than telling her about those parts of his days that are filled with filth, monsters and predators. But today she's there too. Lisa, in the rich orange vest she'd been wearing the very first time he saw her. She races up to him in the foyer, laughing breathlessly.
Come on, give me a hand here, we have things to do, remember?
She kisses Ianto quickly and hurries off towards the stairs. He starts after her, but the crowd surges around her and carries her away. He stays rooted to the spot, feeling the sweet warmth where her lips are pressed against his cheek. "I wanted you to see," Ianto calls out, but his voice is swallowed by the chatter of the foyer crowd. He'd promised to show her all of it, the building right over her head, just as soon as she was cured. Described it all, the wood and the slate, copper domes surging above, the words glowing at night. Gwyr fel gadir, truth like glass. It's okay now, though, isn't it? She's here now. She can see it all now. When he wakes up, he's shaking so hard that the duvet is half off, and his face is wet. And it's dark in the room. From the chair, Jack says, "Are you awake?" It doesn't matter if Jack isn't planning to kill him, because the cold definitely will. "Dream," Ianto stutters, then, "Too cold." "Yeah, me too. I can't figure out how to get the heating on in this place. Can you imagine that? Alien hypertechnology? No problem. British gas? I'm screwed every time." The mattress shifts as Jack sits on the bed. Ianto feels a hand on his face, cupping his cheek. Warm, warm like sunlight. He turns, pressing his face closer, his lips tingling as they press against Jack's palm, and he lets himself be reeled in. Puts an arm around Lisa's murderer and clings on like he was drowning. That's unfair, he knows. The Cybermen did this. But Jack had planned that terrible distraction for their escape, held him back as the platform soared up and Lisa screamed below. Or someone, something that sounded like Lisa, smelled like her, knew all the things they'd ever done together. His head is spinning. Ianto screws his eyes shut and tries to bury himself in the warmth. When he wakes up again, Jack's standing by the window, silhouetted against pale, pre-dawn light. He looks around when Ianto sits up. "Okay, listen. I have to get back to Torchwood now. I need to finish the clean-up. And you need some time to yourself to decide what you're going to do. But you have to promise me something before I go." Ianto feels dehydrated and not all there. Okay. "If you don't want to come back, you call me and tell me. I don't want to be sitting around day in, day out, wondering if I need to go recruiting again. I think you owe me that, at least." That doesn't make any sense at all. Ianto tries to sit up properly, scrubbing at his hair. You'd let me come back? Jack nods, shrugging. Why? It's easier for me. You know your job. You do it well, when you're not lying to me and deceiving me right under my nose. You have a hell of a lot to make up for, and guilt's a great motivator in my experience. So yeah, I want you right back where I can keep an eye on you, working your little ass off for me, paying your debt. That practical enough for you? Ianto stays silent, hands knotted in the duvet. It's not as if he can expect anything better, he knows that. Jack nods curtly, as if he'd replied, and opens the bedroom door. On the threshold, though, he turns back. "Listen, the thing is, I don't take too well to being betrayed by the people I care about. But I know I'm going to stop being pissed about this, eventually. Because I know why you did it. I may not like it, but I do understand, Ianto. And maybe when I've stopped wanting to beat the crap out of you, all I'll remember is how hard this must have been for you. On the good days, I might even think of you as a little bit heroic." He gives Ianto the faintest of smiles, and then he's gone. The rest of the flat is freezing, but the bed has warmed up. Ianto stays there, sleeping and dreaming. When the tea in the thermos is gone, he shuffles into the kitchen and makes more, watching kettle steam filling the room, but not bothering to try to light the boiler. He takes the thermos back to bed, draws the curtains, drinks hot black tea and sleeps again. There are no clocks in the flat, and no sign of his watch. He curls up in bed, trying not to feel the silence inside his own head crushing him to death. The alternative is thinking about all the things he can't even begin to cope with. It might be a day later, or half a day, or two. Doesn't matter. Ianto showers, feeling stiff and sore, staring down at the bruises from shoulder to hip from where she'd thrown him over the rail, and the finger marks on his arms where the others had wrestled with him. It feels like another country, another life. No razors in the bathroom, which bothers him. but there are plenty of clean clothes in the wardrobe next door. He gets dressed and goes into the living room. There's a carrier bag on top of the nearest stack of boxes. Inside it he finds his wallet, phone, watch and keys, and the picture of the two of them on holiday at Cashel, less than a year ago now that would have been. It's a nice photo. He'd placed it where Lisa could see it to remind her of who she really was under what they'd done to her. She'd never asked for a mirror. Maybe the cyber part of her brain had known what that would do. The rest of the holiday album must still be down there, and the books he'd read to her, the lamps, the TV. Jack will be thorough, though. I need to finish the clean-up. Jack will obliterate everything. Ianto's seen him do that before, one of the pieces of equipment that stays under the most secure storage. He's no idea how it works, but it doesn't even leave dust. He'll have used it on everything down there, the cybertech and anything that might have been in contact with him. It will all be suspect in Jack's eyes. He doesn't exactly think about Lisa, just lets the knowledge settle into him that there won't be a body for him to claim. He draws the curtain, switches the lights on, and goes through the boxes, sorting her things. Clothes, shoes, her makeup. Some of it can go to the nearest Oxfam. A few things go into the bag with a photo. Her first postcard to him. A handful of notes and post-its she used to leave stuck around the flat or in his office, complete with doodles of tiny dragons and teasing little jokes. It takes the time it takes. He goes back to bed at one point and eats the hobnobs when he gets light-headed, even though he detests the way they get stuck in his teeth. There isn't anything else, and he can't face going out for groceries. It's dark when he's done. His watch says 6:15. He leaves some boxes out in the alley by the bins and gets into the car, with a black bag on the passenger seat next to him. He heads off, stopping for chips and coke on the way, and eats and drinks as he drives out of the city. It takes him nearly 5 hours to get to Abersock. Not bad, considering it's at night, and the sounds around Cricethus aren't as straightforward as they could be. It's good to have to concentrate on the driving. He hasn't been here since he was 20, but it's surprisingly easy to find his way back to the empty car park at Porth Ceriad. He takes the carrier bag and a torch from the boot, picking his way carefully down the stone steps cut into the cliff face. It's pitch dark, cold but dry, and not another soul in sight. He sits high on the beach, against a rock with the torch out. There's no wind here and the waves are subdued. After a while he can make out stars, and the distant winking lights of ships out in Cardigan Bay. He thinks about lighting a fire, but she's been burned too much already. Salt water will be okay, though. He puts the carrier bag between his knees, reaches in, shreds everything slowly and carefully, sifting each torn square of paper and pinching it down between numbing fingers, until there's nothing but a little heap of soft confetti. As the sky starts to lighten far off to his left, Ianto kicks off his trainers, walks down to the water's edge and into the sea, feeling the icy November water hammer against his legs. He takes the paper chaff and scatters it, 3 handfuls, and turns the bag inside out over the grey water, watches the coloured flecks bobbing and swirling with the waves. Foam. He's foam now, a bubble, clean and empty and invisible again. There's a phone box by the car park. He stands there, his jeans wet to mid-thigh, and dials the number. When Jack answers, Ianto says, "Can I come back, sir?" There's a small, sharp silence, then Jack says, "Sure. When?" "Today. Later today." "Good. Get Tosh to text the new passcodes to you," Jack says briskly, and hangs up. No sentiment, no questions asked. Just how Jack likes it. Ianto puts the empty bag into the nearest bin, gets into the car and starts the engine. He'll be back in Torchwood by midday.